Blog Talk Radio.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, you're on up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." The devil opened up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings, and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in, and it sounded something like this. Johnny said, "Well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granted, if you don't fight, no child, no." The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat, and he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been." He played, "Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. The chicken in the bread pan, I'm picking out dough. Granted, we a dog fight, no child, no."
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Rocky and the Gons podcast. My name is Raquel Okiai, and my guest co-host is Perry Eidelbus.
Glad to be back.
Yes, thanks for coming on with me tonight, Perry. I'm looking forward to our discussion about post-election night, which was this week, this past Tuesday.
Oh, you know I wouldn't have missed and this.
There's a lot of things going on in the news the past 2 days, including recalls. Or not recalls, recounts rather, in big elections, and also potential of voter fraud. So I want to get into the topic. But before I do, if anybody's listening online and they want to have a question or comment, please feel free to call in. The number is 646-787-8638. Again, that's 646-787-8638. You can dial 1, and that'll let us know that you want that you have a comment or a question. So thank you for listening in, and welcome. So what do you think? What do you think, Perry? What's going on? Just to give everyone an intro, I'm specifically talking about Florida right now. Rick Scott was running against the incumbent Democrat, Bob Nelson, who's been there for a very, very long time. So he's an incumbent Democrat in the U.S. Senate seat. Rick Scott's a popular governor. He's popular to Floridians. He gets a lot of good attention from his work during, you know, the hurricane season. He's really upfront and hands-on type of governor, and a lot of us appreciate that. So right now, it's a neck-and-neck race. Rick Scott fought the Democrats, refused to say that they lost. And Bill, is it Bill or Bob? I don't even know. It's Bill Nelson. Actually, I think I called him Bob. anyway, Bill Nelson, it didn't say that he lost, and now that there was a recount, Rick Scott filed a lawsuit. I understand that all recounting has to stop tonight at 7 o'clock. I don't know what the latest was. Do you know anything?
I haven't. I was hoping that you would be the most knowledgeable about having an update. Like you were telling me earlier, you're expecting a judge to make an announcement. And I saw something earlier about a supposed Republican-leaning judge refusing to allow I shouldn't even say it unless I know exactly what it was, but the gist was, I believe, that there were going to be no additional counts. But I guess what we could always do is look on CNN.com and see what the latest spin is. It's ridiculous how everything the Democrats are trying to spin in their favor.
I think so, too. And I think that they're also claiming a win in the House where they did take over control of the House of Representatives. But when you look at past elections, as we spoke about earlier, Perry, when you look at early elections, midterm elections, always tend to switch at least one chamber, you know, moves to the opposite direction when there's one party in control. So the Democrats had the control. They had the control of the executive office and the Congress. And usually in the Republicans had control. And usually in midterm elections, what happens is what we saw this week, and that's that the Democrats took over the House. There's really nothing unusual for that to happen. And in fact, the Republicans had big gains in the U.S. Senate and other races. You know, Trump is still doing very well, I believe. And I think going into 2020, he has a good he has good things behind him. I think he's going to be successful. I'd really like to see, you know, Rick Scott get this election through. I did vote for him. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, Mark Levin had a great point Tuesday evening. I usually don't listen to his show, but I was tuning in through the radio on a drive, and he had a very, very good point. He was of the side that, the Republicans are probably going to lose the House, keep the Senate. So when that happens, and Democrats would invariably say, this is a referendum on Donald Trump, where were Democrats in 1994 saying that the Republicans' massive victory was a referendum against Bill Clinton? Where were Democrats several years ago after Republicans took back the House, 2 years later took back the Senate also, that this was a referendum against Obama, which I will tell you, both those times, absolutely they were referendums against Bill Clinton and Obama. What was one of the first things that Bill Clinton did after he was inaugurated? He started working on one of the biggest tax hikes this country ever saw. What was one of the first things that Obama did? And again, he had a Democratic-controlled Congress to pass whatever he wanted, Obamacare. So, less than 2 years later.
Yeah, even that Obamacare was passed on the eve of a holiday vacation in December for Christmas vacation. And they knew starting January 1 that the tables were going to turn into the Republicans' favor. And they had they only could do the vote before Christmas. You know, so much trickery going on. And the news doesn't call out the Democrats when stuff like that happens. We do have a caller that wants to come in, Perry. If I can bring him in. Chianti. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
How you guys doing?
Welcome to the show. What say you?
Well, at least in Missouri, they got rid of Claire McCaskill and elected Josh Hawley, a Republican.
Hallelujah.
And I'm down here in Baton Rouge, where this state is so red when it rains, it looks like red dye number 40. And you know, and I never have seen the candidates, they put out their posters, and they have a strip across the top, Trump conservative, because to show you how so loyal they are here for the president that we have. And once again, I have to say that I'm African-American. I supported and voted for Donald Trump. And you have to ask, why do I have to say that all the time? Well, it's simple. Because everybody thinks I'm a Democrat. And when they look at blacks, they think they're a Democrat, which is totally, totally stupid. But, you know, I was hoping whites has got to come out and vote more so than what they have. I see a movement where you have young blacks that's moving away from the Democratic Party. I think they're educated, they're professionals, but you know, we have to do much better than what we're doing. And I could give you another suggestion. We got to get out and find 10 people and tell them what's going on. You need to have your young people with you also, because if they're not here to understand what you're saying, how in the world would they ever know? The news media is not going to teach them. So those are just some suggestions, and we got to use some better strategies than what has been deployed.
Do you think it's true, Chianti, that Black Americans really are moving in that conservative direction as you have? And do support Trump. You know, there has been some headlines and some photo ops. And I don't know, you know, on the ground, is that true? Do you think it's getting better or it's getting worse?
I think that there are some that are moving away from him, especially if they're educated. Now, you know, the public schools in black areas are just terrible. But black people, when they're polled and surveyed, they want school with vouchers so they can take their children out of those bastions of failure. And, you know, I hate to say it like that because the children are catching the blunt of it, and no child wakes up in the morning wanting to be a failure. But you got these liberals, you got these teachers unions, you got these organizations like the NAACP and the Urban League League to a certain extent. They will not let those kids go. It's just like Moses going to Pharaoh. They won't let them go.
Oh, right.
So I hope that sort of
to your own detriment, really.
Absolutely it is. And look at these immigrants that's coming into these caravans. You remember Eric Holder and Fast and Furious? What are those guns in up? Are those the guns that these gangs that are supposed to be terrorizing these people to the point where they want to leave their country? I think there's a little of that. I think there's also some underlying funding that's going on, and we hear the same old names all the time, George Soros and some of these other usual suspects. I think that there's this underlying movement that's trying to destroy the fabric of the United States. I really do. I mean, you can see it. You start putting two and two together, you can see how these pieces are falling into place.
I think so, too. I think it shows in people, and because of the media being so open, you know, where we could be here in the U.S. and we could read and learn about international news and what other people are saying, or, you know, the independent news or the alternative news online, and people are educating themselves. They're able to go to different sources other than turning on the television and watching the local news stations, who I think, you know, they do have this sort of agenda. It's not that like natural investigative reporting. I don't see a lot of that going on. What I do see going on is like talking points, whether it's left or right, it's always some kind of talking point. And right now, you know, the trend is, you know, bashing the president, and it comes out of the major newspapers,
you
New York Times, the LA Times.
Right.
It's a constant bashing
of
the president, and I think the people are smarter than that. I think they see behind that. What do you think?
I asked blacks, what is it you don't like about Trump? They can't answer. It's just the news. Look at these last two deals with Acosta's and this one black reporter. Why would she ask Trump about Mueller? How many times has he already said he wasn't going to fire Mueller? Somebody is putting these people up to do that. Out of all the trouble that blacks have in their communities in this country, she asks Trump about Mueller. And you go any place in the black community and mention Mueller's name, they don't know what the hell you're talking about.
They don't have anything else. They're basically parrots. They have no other questions. Part of it is psychological trickery. If you ask something a million times, perhaps the person you're asking is eventually going to slip up. It's not quite an interrogation, but they're hoping Trump will not say, I'm not firing Mueller. They're hoping he will say something that doesn't exactly deny it so they can spin it. Oh, Trump implies he might fire the special counsel. That's what they're looking for. We've had media for, my gosh, 3.5 years ever since Trump announced his candidacy. And remember, I was pretty anti-Trump from the beginning, and I'm not a supporter of his still by any means. But I sure like the tax cuts and the regulation cuts and the energy drilling, the energy output increase from drilling and everything else. But nonetheless, I've been so dismayed that ever since he threw his hat into the ring, the media is picking everything apart that he says. They're spinning the least bit. They're taking things wholly out of context, like the fine people. Remember what he said about Charlottesville, that he's calling – supposedly the white racists fine people when he wasn't saying anything of the kind. They're trying this with the special counsel, hoping he'll say something that, oh, Trump opens up the possibility of firing Mueller. It's absolutely ridiculous, the kind of media that we're seeing coming out. I am so glad Jim Acosta got his White House press credentials revoked. It was about time.
Not only him, but look at the countless others that still had security clearance where they could come back in any place, even if they was out of the office or off of the job. Why come Obama didn't do that?
Well, Acosta apparently found out the hard way that his credentials were revoked when he came back to do an 8 p.m. piece, and they said, nope. You're done. They didn't exactly say that, but that was the essence of it. He found out very, very hard, and it couldn't have happened to a bigger schmuck.
I don't know how old you are, but I know how old I am. I have never seen a president so thorough, especially keeping their word based on what their campaign on, like I have witnessed with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not the most polished speaker. Matter of fact, I kind of like the man because he speaks what's on his mind. He don't take no crap. And that's something that we are not used to seeing. I like the man, and I'm saying this, we got to get out and vote. We have to use some strategic methods and get other people. And I'm saying this to whites. Whites has got to get out and vote. I can't get this out of the black community, but whites have got to get off their lazy butts and get out there and vote. I went out and researched 50 companies, new companies, foreign investments from Toyota to tire companies, aluminum companies that have started up in this country since Donald Trump put the tax reform in place and the tariff. And if people say, well, all they was talking about doing it when Obama, no, read the papers. See what they said. It's based on the moves that he's made. Now, sure, when you change things, you have some that's going to get hurt in the initial period. The farmer is going to be hurt in the initial period. The company that was sourcing what they need to manufacture from foreign businesses, they're going to be hurt initially until American manufacturers come back on board. And that's a good thing. We're putting Americans back to work. And I can't see anything this man has done wrong.
I disagree with Trump on tariffs. That's partially why I opposed him when he was initially running. I am a pure free trader. I believe that if a foreign company, if a foreign country makes something cheaper for me, it's not the right of the U.S. government to tell me that, no, you're going to have to pay a higher price for that. And because the price is so high because of tariffs, I'm just going to wind up buying American. I think that tariffs economically make no sense whatsoever because it puts the burden on the consumer. However, what you were saying, Trump has been honest about his campaign platform. So when people were supporting him initially, yeah, he made nothing unclear about his position on trade with China, trade with Europe. Absolutely, he's a big protectionist. At the same time, though, he surprised me by using this tactic and then says, look, we're raising our tariffs, but China, you lower your tariffs, we'll lower our tariffs. And he has specifically said his goal is no trade barriers around the world. I have never, I guess you're older than I am. I don't like to say exactly how old I am. But I've never heard a president speak like that before. I disagree with the tactics because I'm a pure free trader again. But if that's his goal, wow, I hope it eventually happens. The alternative is that we still have tariffs around the world. If Trump didn't do this, we'd still have free trade agreements, which when you look at what Bill Clinton negotiated, George W. Bush, and especially Barack Obama with the Trans-Pacific hogwash, we have been pretty shafted as a country on trade agreements. We absolutely have. They gave too much away in order to get some American products exported to Canada, to Mexico, to China. Part of the managed trade agreements, beginning with NAFTA, would be, oh, yeah, but you've got to import tons from us. And we don't have – and the other countries are saying, and we don't have to open up our markets very much. Missed opportunities by three administrations in a row. Really, really pathetic.
Well, yeah.
That's something Trump would say, really pathetic.
Yeah. And we can agree to disagree. But one thing we have to agree on is that we have to get people involved. And one thing that's very precious, you have to get your young people involved. They need to be in your conversation. The decisions that you are making today, they will have to live with when we are long gone. And I would hate to be turning over in my grave. So that's about all I can say right now.
Well, I don't have a very high opinion of young American voters. I know too many. I've seen interviews with too many. They are the ultimate entitlement generation, as in self-entitled, not entitlement government programs. And yet, entitlement programs is something that they strongly believe in. You look at all the 20-somethings, and I've pointed out on my personal social media timeline, the ones that went out to vote this last November are post-Monica. Okay? So they went out to vote. They have no idea of the corruption back then that the Clintons got away with. So they have been growing up in this world, and I call it post-Monica, where the news so thoroughly lies and covers up for Democrats. I've never seen anything like this. I'm old enough to know that. I remember Reagan wasn't treated so badly. They called him the amiable dunce. George H.W. Bush, oh my goodness, with his reelection campaign, the lies, the misrepresentations started coming out. Then we really saw it with George W. Bush. And, of course, for 8 years we saw the media in the tank for the Clintons, and then another 8 years for Obama. But there's never been anything like this, has there?
Well, Donald Trump was
right. But I think, you know, what I think makes Trump different is because, the news is very polarizing between the Dems and the Repubs. And if it's a Repub in office, the liberalized news, mainstream news, they hit the Republican hard. So I can recall Junior being hit pretty hard in the news media, except that he didn't he didn't fight back. He didn't have snarky responses. He sort of just took it as maybe that was supposed to be the case, that they're going to hit him hard, every little dumb thing he says or anything they see as him doing wrong. I mean, George Bush was all over the newspapers about every stupid thing, and it was kind of annoying. But George Bush didn't, fight back. He didn't say anything to them. He sort of let them step all over him. Here, Trump comes in, and Trump does not – if you're going to shovel it out, he's going to shovel it right back at you. And I think that's a personality trait. I think it's the New York style. So if you're a New Yorker and someone calls you, names and says blah blah blah, well, your first reaction is blah 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 right back. And because he's sort of true to his word, so he's not going to pretend everything that you're saying is normal and go ahead and trash me, U.S. senators, go ahead and trash me. But I'm not going to say anything. Yeah, I think that's the big difference between Trump and one of the differences between Trump and the other president faced the same onslaught. Who faced it? I think people are just bigots. They don't like the way he walks and talks. It's never really about, or it hasn't been about any policy. Perry, you can articulate a policy difference position, without, bashing the president personally or bashing him because you dislike the way he walks and talks. You're not looking at it from that perspective. And, I think people have to. I mean, they have to. What is he doing for the country? Do some research. Don't just listen to the very polarized Dems, who are just like, oh, he blew his nose. What a bad guy. It's a constant onslaught of trashing the president as if they're going to, make him be impeached, or there's nothing going on. The president's the president. He's going to be around at least till 2020. I kind of don't know where they're going with it sometimes.
it's a lost cause.
But I really have a lot of faith in the American people, even the young people. It just takes time sometimes. It just has to filter in. I think there's so much more access to information for them, and that's a good thing. So they don't have to just rely on their college professors. They can do their own research, and they can find, pretty much anything they want online. But we're coming at the bottom of the hour. We are going to take a break. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. This is the Rocky and Gons podcast. My name is Raquel Okai, and my co-host is Perry Eidelbus. We appreciate your calls. If you're listening online and you have a question or comment, please call in 646-787-8638. Again, that's 646-787-8638, and we will be back in about 5 minutes. We'll be right back.
pajama, rolled out of bed, and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout, and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did mama saw? It was against the law. The mama looks down and spit on the ground every time her name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Mama, take me away, but the press let the story leak. Now when the radical preach come to get me released, we's all on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Rocky and the Gons podcast. My name is Raquel Okiai. My co-host is Perry Eitelbus. This is a Wynn World Integrity News Network production. Thank you for listening in. I wanted to get your opinion. Another kind of race people have been talking about is that the U.S. Congress House race in the Bronx, where it's a part of New York, as you know, Perry. That really is not competitive for Republicans. So, you know, it's so liberal. You know, I think in the Bronx it might like seven to one registered Democrats to Republicans. It's just a county that doesn't elect Republicans. So what the race was, you know, the primary race in this was really the most important part, because as long as the Democrat won the primary, then that Democrat was the most likely person to win the U.S. House seat. And we got a lady, the youngest, I believe I heard at least on the radio, the youngest congressperson ever to get elected into the House of Representatives. And she's 29 years old. She's from the Bronx. Okay, I don't even know what her name is.
Oh, Ocasio-Cortez.
Ocasio-Cortez. And why there's such
but
a...
But she's not really from the Bronx.
Not from the Bronx, actually.
Remember, she grew up... Yeah, she grew up...
Yeah, she's from Westchester, which is completely different county. It's not even in the city of New York, by the way.
Yeah.
Westchester is not the city of New York.
Yorktown Heights is further north than even where I lived in Westchester for all those years. Now, all you city natives would say that, hey, anything north of the Bronx is upstate. I call it semi-upstate, but it's still a heck of a commute, and the implication that, she had close ties to her Bronx family. That was what her campaign fell back on. Okay, then we got into the issue, which was never explored like it would have been for a Republican, of where she really was going to school and what address was supplied. Because if she really was going to a Yorktown Heights school, but truly lived in the Bronx and was going 40 minutes each way, like her campaign initially implied. All right. Well, the city of New York Department of Education may have some problems with that. Except, wait a minute, they do that only if she had been a Republican running. Anyone else? Nah, okay. She's a Democrat, she gets a free pass.
Yeah, right.
Same old story. There was
She came into it, so she comes into it kind of sneakily as an outsider. I mean, people who run in congressional districts or senatorial districts who want to move around and be like carpetbagging, called carpetbagger. So they move into a section where they think they're electable just in order to run in that election. And the voters really don't like that, right? So they want, at least from my experience, they want homegrown. They want somebody that they know about, that has worked in the community, that lives in the community, that understands the community. And so it's pretty disingenuous of her to pretend like, you know, that she's sort of this Bronx native grassroots candidate when she really wasn't a Bronx native, as it turns out. You know, she lives in a separate county in a separate city, which is in New York City, and it isn't the Bronx, you know, so, you know, it's like false pretenses. Okay, let's put that aside for 1 second, because it is false pretenses. Now, it was really, I think, what she was saying on the campaign trail that had a lot of people, you know, wondering what the heck is going on in the Bronx, because she was coming out with just kind of like socialist slogans. Without any meat to it or without any knowledge thereof, or just talking sort of like these weird talking points you might hear
you
from.
You just pay for it.
The socialist,
you remember?
Part.
Yeah, she was asked all of these trillions of dollars that her proposed funding, that her proposed programs will require in funding. She said, like a cheaper apartment, you just pay for it. She's implying that once the federal government takes over health care, basically the Medicare for all, once the federal government takes over health care, somehow it's going to be cheaper, and then you just pay for it.
It makes absolutely no sense, because healthcare is expensive. So somebody has to pay for it. Healthcare is not free. Doctors don't work for free. Nurses don't work for free. Hospitals don't run for free. You know, somebody has to pay for it, don't they?
Well, we'll wind up just like Cuba if she had her way. I had a coworker I mentioned from time to time who said, and he was completely serious about this. He said, look at Cuba, one of the best healthcare systems in the world. He was absolutely serious. He even said they focus on preventative care. Yeah, they focus on preventative care by forcing women to abort babies, which they think might require a little bit more care than a young, healthy farm worker. They decide that somebody's just going to die. They decide that it's cheaper to hack off a limb and let somebody walk on one leg for the rest of his life because a prosthetic's too expensive. Yeah. In socialized medicine, you get every bit that you pay for. It's very true.
Yeah, which is nothing. There's a website out there called The Real Cuba. And there's actual photographs, therealcuba.com. There's photographs of the hospitals and the care that they get. So what the mainstream shows you, or what they talk about, are the hospitals, you know, for the exclusive. And when I say, you know, talk about top, you know, 1%, that's it. The communists who control the country, and they get the good care, but everybody, all the poor people, which is everybody else, the conditions are really horrible. So there's actual photographs of up to date, of hospitals and the kind of care that the poor people get, which is all of Cuba. And they have the fastest rate of abortion. And, you know, studies have shown that, you know, when you have, you know, miserable circumstances, communism in effect, poverty, waiting on line for bread, things like that, it affects society. And you see those high rates of abortion. Whether it's forced or not, you see those high rates in countries like Cuba that are run by communists. You know, but, you know, it is absolutely insane, and the information is out there. Like, we already know that communism doesn't work, yet the Democrats somehow, and this one particular woman, congresswoman now elected, you know, what is she bringing to the U.S., to the U.S. Congress? What is she bringing there? She's bringing, hey, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't really have really big, good education on these topics, but I'm not really from the Bronx at all, but I won, and now I want to have socialism. I want to have communism because everything grows on trees. You know, money grows on trees. I mean, what could she be possibly thinking? What could any of them be possibly thinking? And how is this going to affect Congress?
Yeah. Well, she's a perfect example of what I was talking about earlier, that I've known too many younger Americans. So she's at 29. She's at the tail end of these 20-somethings that go out there. Sure, a lot go to college, and they have dreams of getting a good job, but they're not willing to find an internship and work their way into a job. They're not willing to go into a practical field of study. They're not willing to learn a trade if they can't get more than a sociology degree. And what did she do? She went to college. She worked for Bernie Sanders' campaign, and she is a bartender, or was a bartender. Gee, well, that's a great use of a college degree. How much debt did she take on just to become a bartender? Well, now she's in Congress, and she gets to spread a socialist message of free medical care for everybody, free tuition. She's advocated that too. She wants basically what used to be the American Communist Party's platform, which has been adopted by Bernie Sanders. Yeah, years ago, if you espoused all this, you'd have properly been called a communist. Now today they say, well, I'm a democratic socialist. But for 80 years, the American Democratic Party has basically been the U.S. arm of the Russian Communist Party. They just need to come out and admit it. I'm sick of the pretenses that they are anything but. However, that said, they control the House. They're not going to be able to get anything through the Senate. And even if they did, do they have the two-thirds supermajority to override Trump's veto? In the words of Home Alone, I don't think so. Kind of dating myself there. But my goodness, this could, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, this could be a gift. We've got Nancy Pelosi back as Speaker of the House. Fine. I want her, like Trump
awful
said.
For Democrats. She is such a terrible spokesperson for Democrats. I mean, she's just nobody wants her. I mean, I think the whole country is sick of her. And do you think there's any do you think there's any chance the Democrats are going to wise up and choose a different leader? Because she's just, no offense, and I really don't want to sound like an ageist, because I'm not. But she's been in Congress for so long. And she's tripled, quadrupled. She's a billionaire. Ever since she got into Congress, why do congressmen go to office, go to serve, to make a decent salary, and all of a sudden come out of office and they're billionaires? She's a billionaire. Why don't she just go retire and spend all our money already and leave everybody alone? If the Democrats want to win in 2020, and I'm not saying that I want them to win, but if they want to win, they have to get rid of these. They have to bring in some new blood that speaks for America, that speaks for the American people, that doesn't follow Clinton Democrat line, sanctuary cities, BS, free abortions, free healthcare, all of that. It's not a constitutional republic. It's not, I just think the Democrats have to get back to basics of the way our country is run and stop trying to, like you said, cover up for this communist agenda. Otherwise, I see that they're going to lose, and Trump is going to win in 2020.
I think this is a big backfire for the Democrats. I think that by not retaking both houses, this hurts them more than it helps them. Sure, for the next 2 years, they'll control the House, and a big deal has been made about various House committees having subpoena powers that even Trump cannot resist. So supposedly the House Finance Committee, which I believe Maxine Waters will be heading soon. Oh, gosh. Our other favorite, Maxine Waters. Now, talk about going into politics and suddenly becoming rich. I understand she lives in quite a nice little pad. Where did all her money come from? Hmm? And she was able to pay lower six figures to, I don't think it was a daughter, but one of her relatives to basically be a mail clerk. That's basically what it was. Where is all this money coming from into their or where's all this money going into their pockets coming from? Look at the Obamas. Netflix gives them a $120 million sweetheart deal. Okay? And I will be up front. This is just like Hillary making her speeches at Goldman Sachs for $225,000 a pop per 30-minute speech. It's money laundering. It is payment for services previously rendered. Okay? I may be the victim of an unsolved gun crime or wind up in a pure auto accident because I'm saying something like this so openly, but I am very serious. All of this money floating around, good grief, it is absolutely money laundering. They may get it from an initially...
Stricter campaign finance laws, things like that. Do you think they work? Do you think that we can make laws that put a rein on this, you know, pay for play, quid pro quo politics that goes on? And it's a lot of money that changes hands. And just to give the listeners an example, so you know, you have the pharmaceutical companies have had interest in making laws that help them sell their products. They have a lot of money. They give huge donations to campaigns. And in return, the person who gets elected has to wheel and deal with the pharmaceutical companies, for example. And in that wheeling and dealing, they produce laws that are helpful to those companies. So this is the kind of quid pro quo that I believe shouldn't be going on. They shouldn't be going on because it should be – they should be basing laws on the, you know, what's the best for the people, the American people, not the interest, the special interests that are, you know, soliciting them or that are donating, making these big donations. What do you think about campaign finance laws?
Well, I'm not the biggest Rush Limbaugh fan, but I agree with him more often than I disagree. And he said a number of years ago that all of these campaign finance reforms, this was in the early 2000s, are incumbent protection acts. On paper, they sound good. The mission statement, if you want to generalize it that way, of we want to remove corruption, blah, 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 it's all bunk. They are carefully designed to keep incumbents in power, and that's why both parties, you'll notice, whenever it comes to campaign finance, are extremely bipartisan. They'll work together. Republicans and Democrats, they'll say, my distinguished colleague, I oppose his ideas because blah, blah, and they'll pretend to be opposites on different issues. Sometimes they really are, but when it comes down to retaining their power, they are absolutely playing ball together. Sure, this election swung in favor of the Democrats, but all of this campaign finance reform, it hurts someone like you and me, except I don't donate to candidates. I never have, never will. But it hurts the smaller people because it puts limits on how much we can donate. But if you're a big corporation like Pfizer, if you are a mega millionaire or a billionaire, you can found your own political action committee. Could we ban political action committees? Well, possibly, but they just pop up with something else. Meanwhile, you are genuinely restricting freedom of speech of maybe one of the Koch brothers who wants to start a political a PAC. Can't really talk to
that. Right, but
to start a political action committee that wants to spread some message of freedom and to fight bad legislation, those would get restricted. But the bad guys are going to find their way around it, just like bad guys always find a way to get their hands on guns or other weapons to assault innocent people. So campaign finance reform, nah, it never works. I was very happy that the Supreme Court struck down McCain-Feingold.
It's the wolf watching the hen house. It's the same reason why they always give themselves raises or they always end up with, you know, good packages. Congress is exempt from Obamacare. They get their own get to keep their own private health insurance and are exempt from Obamacare. It's one of the, I think, a huge problem. I don't know, you know, special rights for special people is right there, and that's unconstitutional. I don't know how they get away with some of the things that they do. And you know, whether the Democrats have control or not of the House, I think you're right. They can't get anything passed through the Senate that is disagreeable, maybe to you or I, and certainly not pass the president unless they have a supermajority. So they're still in a tough spot. And not that I want to give the advice to Democrats, but I do think if they really want to move forward from this election, they're going to have to start worrying about the American people and start putting up some different ideas or some different candidates that don't support this communist lifestyle. It really keeps people down. It keeps people in poverty. We're a nation, you know, we want a free market economy. We want people, if you work hard and you strive to do better, you can live the American dream, but you have to work for it. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And working for it, it really, you know, there is benefit to that, to your own person, to your family, to your life. When you're doing it yourself, when you're paying your own bills, when you're, you know, working hard, even though it can be a struggle, at the end of the day, you feel better, you know, by yourself, and you strive to do things better for your kids and so on, and generations supposed to get better and better. But this cycle of poverty, this welfare cycle of poverty, it just goes on from generation to generation. Grandma's on welfare, mom is on welfare, child is on welfare, grandchild is likely to be on welfare as well. And it actually just keeps people down. So, you know, the universal health care is the same idea. There's no competition. You have a bunch of bureaucrats making decisions about your health care when the free market can do that, you know, provide the services, you know, take out the bad services or the better services, always in a free market. And I know you can talk about it better than I can, Perry, but always in a free market, the best services are what prevail because it's the consumer that decides. It's our bargaining chip, basically. And when you put the government in charge of it and claim to be free, we're Democrats and we're giving you free coverage, it's never free. And it wasn't free with Obamacare even enacted. So many people were complaining about the higher rates, losing their doctors, having to go into this exchange, having to pay more money. Somebody has to pay. Nothing is for free.
Oh, but just tax the 1%. That's always the answer. Tax the rich. Tax the rich. You ask Ocasio-Cortez. You ask Bernie Sanders. You ask Hillary. You ask Maxine Waters. Any Democrat, how are you going to pay for this? And they'll say, well, we need to raise taxes on the rich. Make them pay their fair share. What happened in 1993 when Bill Clinton was inaugurated and he enacted his tax reform? What happened to the middle-class tax cuts that he had promised? He very much promised them in his campaign. You can Google his campaign literature. We wound up with one of the biggest tax hikes in American history. So when a Democrat promises to raise taxes only on the rich, everybody else had better watch out. Watch out, because it is not going to stop with the rich. Just like, did you know the original federal income tax was only supposed to be on the top 1/10 of 1%? They were supposed to carry basically all income taxes, and then the 1% would pay the rest of it. It was a bait and switch. You had Woodrow Wilson promising that they're going to cut tariffs, which would benefit all Americans who are buying foreign goods, and the top 1/10 of 1% would pay the bulk of taxes to replace tariff revenue. Did it stop there? Of course not. Most Americans don't know this. This is lost even in college history classes. It's something that you just have to find reading for yourself.
It's a very progressive tax rate. So the higher the more money you make, the higher your tax rate is, and that's on the grand scale of things. So what ends up happening is that the middle class are paying those income taxes, and it's really hurting them. And if they strive to get ahead, they strive to do better at what, you know, their job. They want to make more money. Well, now they're at risk of going into a bracket that is going to take even more of their money because of the progressive tax rate already in place. I don't know that people understand that. So, you know, Democrats are screaming about tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich, and well, a problem is going to be solved. We're already doing that.
And it's not
solving
the
problem because the rich the rich create jobs. You know, they just do. They spend their money and they create jobs. They're not spending their money and putting it back into the economy if they're giving it straight back to the government so that they can redistribute
the top 1%,
it and keep people in poverty. What I think.
No, the top 1% in the United States pays 36% of federal income taxes. Well, let's round it down to a third. So you take a cross-section of the United States, you take 100 people, and one person is paying a third of all the tax revenue. Sure, he's going to be a very wealthy person, but we can't make the assumption that just because he's wealthy, he can afford to. Number one, it's immoral, and number two, it's impractical, because the more tax money is taken from him, the less he's spending on everything else. He's not going to go to restaurants. He's not going to buy a new car. He's not going to buy a new house, which creates middle-class construction worker jobs, you see. He's not going to go on vacation where a hotel worker is trying to work his way through college.
God's lights breaking this morning over the grounds of the United States Military Academy.
Oh, are we going to sing?
A most solemn
yes,
today,
of course.
Veterans Day.
We are at the top of the hour. Thanks everyone for listening in.
For our freedom.
Very
so many of
program.
Were schooled
thanks
on
so
these
much,
very
Terry, for joining me tonight and your
ago,
input.
President Woodrow Wilson deemed
thank you for asking me again.
Day, celebrating peace.
I want to say happy Veterans Day to everyone and all the veterans that have served our country over the years. God bless you all.
The 11th day of the 11th month of 1918. A peace that remains sought after still.
Singing the national anthem.
Please join us here on Sports Center as we begin a very special Veterans Day.
Colors, mark time, arms. Colors, ready, halt. Colors, present, arms.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, for the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glow of unbursting
Oh.
fine breath tonight.
Oh, it's great. Thanks so much.
We've been talking 5,000 words a minute.
A little fast paced. Thanks again,
well,
everyone.
Thank you
for
again so much for asking.
Good night. See you next week. Same time, same place.